Final hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this hot Thursday here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Dunnick here with you. We say hello to our good buddy Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet, who joins us this time every Thursday. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Well, it's 90 degrees in Nashville. What about Toronto?
Actually, I got to tell you, it's a nice day out today. I don't know if it's quite 90,
okay. But
it's really nice. I'm actually doing this. I just did a Peloton, and I'm sitting on my back deck while we do this interview. So
okay.
We can't always do that in Toronto like you guys in Nashville, so it's nice.
So you're in the cool-down period. Okay, good.
You are a true cyclist. I did my true cool-down, and now I'm really cooling down.
Awesome. I'll tell you what, Montreal cooled down Vegas a little bit last night, and boy, I thought Shea Weber was outstanding. That's the Shea we watched for a long time here in Nashville. I just thought, he proved his worth. Not that he didn't prove his worth. We all know how great he is, but I just thought he really – Carey Price stood out, but I thought Shea Weber, number six, stood out as well.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about it with Weber is he's basically doing it, it looks like, with eight fingers, right? Both his thumbs appear to be hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but a couple weeks ago, at the end of the regular season when Weber was out, the Canadians accidentally released a photo of Weber getting vaccinated, and it showed that he was wearing a harness or something on his left thumb. And we knew he was out of the lineup at the time, and they'd shown some video of him skating with one hand and shooting left-handed, and we know he isn't left-handed. So we thought there was something wrong with the left hand, and accidentally they showed us that there was. And then in game one, he took a slash off a face-off from Ryan Reeves, and we saw him shaking his hand. Like, he went to the bench and he was shaking it. And I didn't realize at the time until someone pointed out to me the next day, it was the other hand, and it was right on the thumb. And if you saw last night, he was at the end of the game on the last shift when he was blocking some shots and generally causing havoc, he was shaking that right hand again.
Oh,
so
he was.
He's got two badly hurt thumbs. And the joke I make is, you guys know Weber, he'll just cut off the thumbs, put them in ice, and reattach them in August, right?
Yeah, so true. Elliot,
what he's doing right now is amazing.
It's amazing. The story that comes to mind for me, the 2015 first round, Predators against the eventual Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks. Predators actually are a higher seed. Blackhawks, people might not remember that, but he gets his kneecap dislocated.
Yep.
I think in the first game, if it not the first, it was definitely the second, and he was fully prepared. He was telling people, "Just you got to figure a way. I got to get back in." The doctor's like, "You cannot come back in this game."
Yeah.
He was like, "I got to try."
Yeah, your kneecap came out of its socket, Shea. You cannot play.
Unfortunately, he missed the rest of the series, which was a big factor. They lost Mike Fisher in that series too, but that's the kind of pain threshold he has.
We were talking
earlier. I think he's just determined. Like, he's one of those guys. He's like, it's just a mindset, right? And I think some of those people are borderline insane, but he just refuses to admit to defeat to anything. And I remember, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, I couldn't remember, but he was playing with an injury, and one of the other Canadians told me, you would not believe what this guy is going through to play right now. And you guys would know. I mean, you guys were just talking about it. Your fans would know, the Predators fans. They've seen this all. I think to a lot of other people, I don't think we really understand the pain threshold or the sheer will. It's like he refuses to admit defeat to anything. It's really quite amazing.
We were talking earlier, Elliot. Now it shifts back to Montreal. We know at the very end they were the first one to get in Canada, first ones to get people in the building. I think it's at 2,500. Yep. Have they announced what they're going to allow for game three?
3,500 for the next two games.
3,500. Okay. So that's
– Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's – Yeah. It's something, but, man, it's too bad because, you guys – you know the atmosphere, what that would be like in a sold-out barn.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been very – so you have to give advantage Vegas because of that, right? Or no?
Well, I think the one thing is that Montreal's gotten used to it, so I don't think it'll bother them anymore. You know, one of the big storylines we were wondering coming into the series was how would Montreal react to its first full house of the year? And I thought they handled it pretty well. I thought they came out in game one. They were the better team in the first game. And then, you know, they ran into penalty trouble and Vegas overwhelmed them. Last night, again, I thought they were the better team to start. They actually had the building really quiet as we've heard it for the playoffs. And then Petrangelo made it 3-1, and there was a big skirmish at the end of the second period. And Vegas really feeds on that. And you know, as we saw, Montreal kind of held on for dear life in the third period. But now the thing's going to be like, I think we're going to be talking about this tomorrow for Game 3. How's Vegas going to handle, like, its first real nothing crowd of the playoffs?
Yeah,
like, it's going to be... It's going to be interesting. You know, about the whole non-crowd thing, it's funny. My buddies who are Toronto fans, they're like, I'm glad we didn't win it this year. And I'm saying to them, you know, be quiet. Like, you don't really believe that. And they're like, no, because we would have won the Stanley Cup and we wouldn't have been able to have a parade. And I'm saying to them, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, you don't really believe that.
Speaking of someone else that we got to know well in their time in Nashville, the Lightning and Islanders, that series shifts and gets underway Game 3 tonight. We got to know Barry Trotz very, very well here, and he was usually pretty cool, calm, and collected on the bench. In fact, we used to take calls, Elliot. Why doesn't Barry ever get mad? Why doesn't that coach ever get animated on the bench? And he was animated in Game 2. There was some horrible calls in that game, and boy, did he let them have it. Bruce Cassidy, I'm sure, would say, tough, deal with it. You deserve some horrible calls. But nonetheless, Barry, very animated in Game 2.
Well, I was a bit surprised because, yes, the referees did have a bad night in Game 2 of that series, but one of those calls really benefited the Islanders. Like, it's not like, you're right, they missed it too many men. There were seven guys on the ice when Tampa scored one of those goals. But don't forget, too, that Tampa had a 1-0 lead. And, you know, for those of you who didn't see the play, Varlamov, the Islander goalie, had to leave the game because Point crashed into him.
Yeah.
And Point got a penalty. And Adam Pellick, the Islanders defenseman, he was completely at fault for that. Like, that was a terrible call.
Yeah.
And it comes right after the Lightning had made it 1-0 in a series they're down. And the Islanders get a power play and they score. And so, yeah, I understand that Trotz was mad about that particular call. I get it. And the referees didn't have a great night. But he did get the benefit of a horrible call his way at a pretty critical time. And, you know, guys, the one thing I do wonder about is those referees, they go into their dressing rooms in the intermissions and they watch exactly what's being said. They know everything that's being said about there. And sometimes I wonder... You know, when Trotz complains after a night like that where he got the benefit of a really rough call, does it hurt you in the long run? I guess we're going to find out in a few hours.
Elliot, is Kucherov just going to sit out next regular season and just play in the playoffs, you think, moving forward?
Jeff and I were joking on the podcast that every year they're going to pick one member of the Lightning who has to sit out.
I heard you guys talking about this.
So they can invest. Yeah, but we said that there's no way Vasilevsky, the goalie, is going to be the one allowed to do it. You know, I think, you know, the amazing thing is that they tried to trade Johnson and they just couldn't do it. And I think they were very close, like days away from trading Killorn. And they did not want to do that. They, you know, and to be honest, guys, I think it's possible he was coming to Nashville. I think he was a guy that you guys had on you. And you guys took a long time to make moves last year. And I think one of the reasons was, I think you guys were one of the teams that he might have ended up with. And they did not want to do that. And it saved Killorn there for the season. And you see how important a player he is for them. I think at some point in time, they're going to have a reckoning here. And I know everybody is complaining about this. I don't have a problem with it. Chicago did it to win the Stanley Cup in the year you guys just mentioned, 2015. If they really wanted to clear up that loophole, they could have done it 6 years ago. They didn't. And the other thing, too, and I know this might not be the most popular take I've ever come up with, I think it's not a bad thing if some of the fans just hate some of the teams in this league. Like, I know that everybody hates Toronto. Like, hate's good. You know, like, you know, the everybody hates the Yankees. You know, either love them or you really hate them, and they're a draw because of it. The Red Sox have become that team. The Dallas Cowboys are all have been that team for a long time. Like, excuse me, if fans are really riled up about Lightning and that, I think that's good. Like, I saw that exchange the Predators had on social media with the Golden Knights. Like, when the Golden Knights said, you know, is there a banner for this? And you guys, your social media team, which I thought was really funny, put one up that says, this is why no one likes you.
Right.
Like, that's true. Like, there's teams that hate the Golden Knights because they don't think an expansion team should be this successful this quickly. Guys, I think that hate is great. We need people that are villains. You cannot have heroes without villains, and I think this is good for interest in the sport.
Interesting. We've tried to, and we're just literally trying to read into every little thing on what does that mean for Pacarina moving forward. Have you heard anything on that front? Do you have any gut feeling, or have you talked to anybody that you think Pekka's leaning one way or the other? Like, we believe on this show that it's either going to be here as the backup next season, mm-hmm. or he's going back to Finland and playing there mm-hmm. to finish out his career. Like, we don't believe he's going to play for another team. So are you hearing anything on that front at all?
Well, the one thing I did hear was when Rask came out and said that he, if he comes back, he's playing in Boston, and if he comes back, he needs surgery and he won't be able to play until probably January or February. What I heard was the Bruins told him, Tuukka, you've earned the right to take your time, and we don't want you to make an emotional decision. The only thing we need to know is we need to know well before, you know, free agency so we can start making our plans. And I think I kind of heard that that was similar to what you guys and Renee were talking about, was that you've earned the right to make your decision. And, you know, I don't think, I think you guys will keep it tight as an organization, because I think the Predators / Renee want to make the announcement their way. So information, I think, is very tight. But the only thing that someone told me was that it was similar with Renee, like, you've earned the right to think about it. Just make sure we have plenty of time to know one way or the other.
Elliot Friedman is with us. We're talking hockey with him. Elliot, you've been hinting the last couple weeks that this was going to get done. Rod Brind'Amour now makes it official. He's staying with the Hurricanes. One thing you mentioned was he was trying to leverage his power, basically, to get better deals for his assistants. Did he succeed in that?
I believe that it was not only the assistants, it was the goalie coach and the training staff and the equipment staff, too. All of their contracts were up. And I believe that happened in every case so far except one, and that's the assistant coach who has permission to talk to other teams, Dean Chenoweth, who runs their defense and their penalty kill. So as far as I know, it's everybody minus him.
One of the things that I heard you guys discussing on your podcast was the aftermath of Colorado, right? Nathan MacKinnon
yep.
and his emotional thing. We haven't won anything. You know, I thought we were going to win it. So Nashville, it's unique. You know, you lose these juggernauts that are leaving, Carolina and Tampa Bay, competing for the President's Trophy. They're gone, and now
yep.
you get Colorado coming back in. They're going to be an angry, hungry team next year. But you were talking about they've got some tough decisions to make with their cap. Tell people about that, because we're going to get very familiar with them again next year.
Well, I think what's going to happen there is, like, they have a lot of free agents. They have Landeskog, their captain, is an unrestricted free agent. Grubauer, the starting goaltender, is an unrestricted free agent. They've got a bunch of depth forwards who are UFAs, and some guys who are restricted, and that includes Cale Makar, who was a Norris Trophy finalist this year and was the only defenseman to average a point a game. And, you know, what I think is they want Landeskog to stay very badly. And he's their captain. He's been a loyal franchise player since he got there. He's a huge part of their team, and they want him to stay. But the tricky thing is Makar. Now, from what I understand, they're willing to talk long-term. Like, a lot of the top young players aren't signing for term right now because they want to wait to see the cap, how much the cap does or does not go up. And they figure if they take three-year deals now, eventually there'll be more room. Makar, I've heard, is willing to talk long-term deal. And I think the Avalanche would like to do a long-term deal. But I have heard if that's the case, the number is going to be very, very big. Hmm. And he's earned it. He deserves it. And so, you know, they've also got MacKinnon in 2 years. And that number, they know, is going to be very, very big. So your priorities are those three guys, Makar, MacKinnon, and Landeskog. But you probably can't give them all what they want. I think they really want to keep Landeskog badly. I think they think he sets the a phenomenal tone for their organization, and they want him to stay. But it's going to be tricky with the Makar, depending on how many years Makar signs for. So I think that's how it's going to work. It's going to be, what's Makar's number? How do we keep Landeskog? We've got to deal with MacKinnon in 2 years, and everything else has to work around that.
Last thing for you, I started to read some of these guys that are starting to take a crack at a mock draft for Seattle. And I saw one where there were three different people taking stabs at it. And on the one that I read in The Athletic this morning, all three guys had a different predator that they took. But it sort of illustrated, when you look at the big picture, not just the team that you're covering, like, of course, here in Nashville, everybody's wondering who are the Predators going to lose. But you have to sort of look at it in the context of Seattle. And I saw a lot of tough decisions between a guy, you mentioned Alex Killorn. You know, Tampa is going to have to somewhere in here shed some payroll. So do you take a guy like that, or do you take more of a young up-and-coming guy who maybe you control a little longer, who's a little cheaper? There's so many tricky ones. Team by team, Seattle's got to make these choices. It sort of hit me in the face just what a big thing this is, just looking at it macro instead of micro.
Seattle, like, every team in the league would say to you guys, we made the ones that we saw some of the mistakes that were made with Vegas, you know, Minnesota, Florida, and they said, we're not going to let that happen to us again. If we lose a player, we lose a player, and we're not walking ourselves into even bigger losses. And then came the pandemic and the flat cap. And now teams are looking at this like, uh-oh, you know, we got some problems here. And so Seattle is basically extorting them again. And, you know, that's the name of the game. You know, that's
right.
That's what they have to do. And, you know, so I think you're going to see, I think teams are basically asking, what's the minimal amount of damage we can do to ourselves and how to get that? And I think that's kind of where we are here. You know, I think there's a big one looming. I think the Eichel one could happen before then. Mm. We'll see how that turns out. But I think there's a lot of teams sitting there saying, oh, my God, I can't believe what Seattle's asking. You know, how do we work around this? It's going to be a big challenge because one of the things I've heard is Seattle only has to draft 60% of the cap. And I think they want to keep their flexibility. And I think they're targeting defensemen. If you look at Ron Francis's history, he built by defense in Carolina. And if you look at positions that are available, especially by free agency the next 2 years, a lot of the impact players are on the blue line. You know, this year it's Hamilton. Next year, if they don't sign, guys like Seth Jones and Colton Parayko and Darnell Nurse are unrestricted free agents. So there's a lot of good depth defensemen out there, too. So I think that's the position that's going to be key, and I think that's the position Seattle's going to target, and teams are going to have to work knowing that.
What are we, a month away from the expansion draft?
Yes. I think it's June
21st.
The draft is the 20th. Yeah, the draft is the 23rd, right? So, yeah, it's 2 days before that.
Okay.
I think the list has to be in on the 17th, if I've got that right.
Yeah, that's when Seattle gets the exclusive window. They get 3 days of an exclusive window to talk to people.
So we are a month out from that date. So exactly a month out. Okay. We shall see. Elliot, good workout, good interview. Great job, as always.
Thanks, guys.
Good job on the back deck. Way to go.
Thanks very much, guys. I hope you heard the birds chirping. I hope that added
something. Was. It did Perfect. Add something. Yeah, it was nice. Elliot Friedman.
I assume they were Blue Jays, I guess.
I think it was a zen interview, you know, hearing the birds. It's nice.
Right.
Very nice.
They're just like the Blue Jays. They do everything great for seven innings, and the last two just doesn't work.
Wow. Wow.
They're getting better, though. They're
Elliot
better.
Friedman, everybody, from Sportsnet and 31 Thoughts. Good stuff from him. As always, Willie, we'll come back and discuss that Athletic article that you just referenced. And we will do that on the other side. But first, I'm going to talk to you about, you know, that golf major, you know, the third major of the year that's coming up this weekend. DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving you a shot to land one on the green. It's something I strive for when I play golf. It happens every once in a while. But you know what? The pros, these guys, this weekend, they're going to be hitting the green a lot. And this week, DraftKings is giving you 100-1 odds on Bryson DeChambeau to sink at least one birdie this weekend. Now, if this was me, if I had to sink a birdie, you're in trouble. But for Bryson DeChambeau, this is a really, really good bet that you should jump on. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook, this is the time. That's 100-1 odds on Bryson DeChambeau hitting a birdie during the tournament. That's 100-1 odds. On an offer like this, it doesn't come around very often, so get in there, sign up right now, download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app, and use the code 1025GAME. When you sign up, turn $1 into $100 in free credits if DeChambeau sinks a birdie this weekend. Use that code again, 1025GAME, to turn $1 into $100 in free credits for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. It's NASCAR weekend here in Nashville. Be sure to get your tickets for Saturday and Sunday, as tickets are going fast. Kids 12 and under get in free on Friday and Saturday, plus the experience the post-race fireworks on Friday night after the truck race. RV camping for NASCAR weekend is still available. For more information, visit NashvilleSuperspeedway.com. Be sure to tune in for the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race on Sunday right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coverage begins at 1:30. The race begins at 2:30, so keep that in mind. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you today, because Chase has been at the Nashville Super Speedway. He'll be back on the show tomorrow. So you referenced it at the end of the interview with Elliot Friedman. By the way, really good stuff from him.
Awesome.
As always, there was an article on The Athletic, and you just heard it. We are exactly a month out today from teams having to submit, you know, who they're going to protect. A month from today, July 17th, is when they're going to have to submit their protect list from the Seattle Kraken. Who are they going to protect? And then Seattle's got 3 days, right? Is it 3 days? The three-day window?
I think the three-day window, and I think the 21st is the day that it comes down. The actual picks are made on the 21st.
So I think they had, what, three writers? Was it three writers?
They had three writers that all took a crack at it, and it says 7.0. So that leads me to believe this is the seventh time they've done that. I didn't see the other six that they did, if that's the case. But this was my first time looking at anything beyond the Predators. We've spent a lot of time since the end of the season, Darren, sort of asking ourselves, okay, let's put a list down. Who would you protect? Who are your eight or whoever it is? We believe that they will select eight skaters and not three defensemen and seven forwards, which is an option, although I don't think they will take that option. So we don't know what the list is going to be, and neither do these guys, right? These guys were taking a crack. I say crack. I'm
you
not trying to make a
crack.
Pun. It is
say,
the Kraken. But they're taking their shot based on the list they think of who's going to be available. For example, one of the guys, their selection from the Predators was Victor Arvidsson. And right now, I think it's very debatable as to whether Victor Arvidsson will be protected or not. I think there's a scenario where maybe he would, but I think there's a good chance they might go ahead and protect him, right? That's one example. But I thought it was interesting that all three guys had a different guy that if they were Seattle, they would take. But it all is in the context of where do you get your defensemen from other teams, or where do you get your forwards from other teams? Which teams are you selecting goalies from? For example, one guy had Cam Talbot and Jake Allen as the two goalies that they ended up with.
I saw somebody had Malcolm Subban from the Blackhawks.
Somebody had Malcolm Subban. So that's these are different philosophies. Do you want the veterans? Do you want a young goalie like Subban who maybe still has another level to him? These are all really important questions. So one guy took Victor Arvidsson. One guy took Yakov Trenin, who that's an intriguing one to me. Like, he's a guy that certainly he has flashed some things that might have you saying, what would that guy look like in another 2 or 3 years, right? That's where the Seattle team could be sitting there going, give me the guy that long range could have a big impact on my team, and I could get him inexpensive for a while. And maybe one guy from one team doesn't work, but another guy hits it big. Vegas certainly had some stories like that of guys who jumped to the next level when they got a chance to play more. And then a third guy took the very safe choice of Calle Järnkrok, who we are pretty certain will be unprotected because he only has 1 year left on his deal. Mm-hmm. Could be a useful trade piece. For example, if Seattle isn't using him much, maybe they're not going anywhere, he could be a great piece to trade for a draft pick to get another asset down the road. But so none of those really surprised me. They did mention a Matt Duchene kind of thing. A couple of them did. They think that the price would be for Seattle to take Duchene would be a first-round pick with him. So that's a question I had coming out of this is, would you give them a first-round pick to take Duchene? And they add Johansson in there as an option as well. Is that something you'd be willing to stomach? Or are you like, I got to call you back?
Oh, I think it's definitely.
If they hang up the phone and say, okay, you want us to take Duchene? Give me your first round pick. There's your pain, but that's the price you would need to pay.
Oof. That is, yeah, that's. I mean, I'm not surprised. That would not be a crazy price tag to take that contract.
Vegas actually did that a number of times. You heard Elliot say, because we talk about it backwards and forwards here, the Predators have some contracts that are not going away anytime soon. The players aren't getting any younger. They would like to get a little younger and free up some cap space. But you know what's interesting is you hear Elliot talk about it, and you read this article, almost every team has got contracts like that. They have same mindset because the cap is flat.
And it's going to be for a while.
Right? Now, there's some teams that are already full-on rebuild, like Ottawa, that are, you know, they got plenty of money. They got a lot of young players. They're in a different spot. But a ton of teams have, you know, that just the players' names change. But the contracts are the same kind of thing. A guy that's got 4 or 5 years left on his contract, not really living up to it. You'd like to move it forward, but it's not like they're just going to snap this guy up. That's what's interesting about Arvidsson, right? I think if he's eligible, that might be an easy one for Seattle to jump up and grab. But do you want to give away Arvidsson for nothing?
What do you think you could get for Arvidsson on the market?
That's a good question. He makes about half of what, you know, a little more than half of what Duchene and Johansson make. Mm-hmm. He's younger than Duchene.
Yep.
He's got wear and tear, as we know, but is he a bounce-back candidate? I think he is, right? And he signed for a few more years, 3 or 4 more years, I think, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he's never played anywhere but Nashville, so it's easy to get caught up in how it just ended. Sort of an injury that plagued the end of his season. It wasn't a great year for him. He's got now back-to-back seasons where they weren't great years. Injuries played a part in both of them. But I just, I hesitate to just lose him straight up.
What'd you make of Trenin being on the list?
Trenin is a really interesting one. First of all, I didn't know he was eligible to be picked because he doesn't have a lot of service time. He was still a rookie, but because he's been a pro for a certain amount of time, and I'll tell you who else is available to be picked is Tanner Jeannot. I didn't know that until Adam put that in the thing. And there's so many little nuances of when you were drafted and how long you've been professional. It's not simply how many games you've played in the league. But those are intriguing guys, right? Because we know what impact they had, both of those guys, Janot and Trennan, had on the late season surge. They were huge.
Yeah,
and they're cheap.
I would not let Trennan go. That's just
so you
me.
You would almost protect him.
I mean, I just wouldn't let a young look. Tanner Janot is a great story, but I don't know how much Seattle. I mean, you know, it's one thing for us to sit here and talk about Tanner Janot, but I don't know how much, you know, he's on Seattle's radar. I mean, I obviously wouldn't want him to, you know, to go anywhere, but I'd really think long and hard. If you think you're going to lose Trennan, then, yeah, I just would not lose him. I think pauses for just a second. I think one thing that stood out to me is how many dang goalies were on this list. Chris Drieger was on the list.
Chris Drieger is an option. Yeah, there's
no question. Was on the list. I mean, like, several of the writers taking Drieger, thinking Seattle might take Drieger. So it was pretty interesting how many goalies were on this list. But getting back to the Predators, I'll tell you what, this is, you know, there are very few times when I'm just like, man, I'm at a kind of a loss. I'm not envious of the decisions that have to be made, because these are tough. I don't know where you go. I mean, you can't protect everybody. You're going to lose somebody. So what is, you know, everybody knows what they would like to have happen, but what if that's not on the table? So what are you willing to lose of the guys that aren't, you know, that we're not discussing? You know, if it's a guy like Callie Yarncroke, if it's a guy like Trennan, if it's a guy like Sissons. I mean, what if it's those guys?
Sissons is another guy that very well could be
although he
available.
Did make the list, but he could be available.
Very well could be available. Well, let's just leave it to the guys who on this article selected. Darren, I'm hearing you kind of say, ooh, you'd almost rather lose Arvidsson than Trennan?
Yeah, I would.
Again, these are really tough choices. I don't want to lose either one of them. But
I know,
you're going to lose somebody.
Right, that's the
it's
thing.
It's like having to vote somebody off the island in Survivor, right? It's like, well, I got to make a tough call here.
I just think because of the contract situation, it's really more about the – I mean, we know it's more about the contract situation. Like,
it's your overall cap health.
With the flat cap for several years to come.
Trennan's a big asset because he's inexpensive.
Inexpensive and younger, and I just they've got to be able to shed one of these contracts. Obviously, everybody knows the two big ones. We get that, but what if that's not in the cards? So to me, one of the bigger contracts has to go, and that's really what it comes down to with me.
And that's what
it's not really about not believing there can't be a bounce back in what you said. It's not really about that. It's about they've got to find a way to get rid of either a big contract or a bigger contract.
And Arvidsson is kind of a tweener, right? He's not a total big, quote-unquote, big contract. There's term, but it's a sort of reasonable term for a guy that is not too far removed from 30-goal seasons.
No, actually, the way I'm looking at it is bigger is not bigger than big. Bigger is just saying it's a bigger contract. Big is the ones at the top, the $8 million contracts.
Right.
Bigger as in, hey, that's bigger than the $2 million a year that Yarncroke makes, right? It's bigger than what Trennan makes, which is, I think, less than $1 million. So what's he make, $750, something like that? So bigger, one of the bigger contracts, but not one of the big contracts, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Elliot had great perspective on that, and he was saying Seattle has figured out that these teams all across the league are in this predicament, and so they're going to take a few big contracts. The question is, who do they take them from? So you can create competition. Here's our going rate to take the contract off of your hands. Now, let's just take Matt Duchene, right? We know what his flaws are. We're looking at him under the microscope. It's been disappointing, his outburst, but he's still a very talented player. Some of these teams are trying to ship out people that can't play.
Right.
It's a contract of a guy who's injured or who's been injured, and you're just trying to dump it right? I would think that at least Matt Duchene's bringing something to the table where Seattle could say, okay, I'm taking a flyer, I'm taking the contract, but I might get a guy that bounces back and scores me 30 goals, right? There's something to be said for that. As opposed to, I'm trying to think of a couple other guys that are on this list of, you know, take this guy and we'll give you this guy. It's there were some guys that that Vegas took that couldn't play anymore. I think it was, what was the guy's name for Columbus? Not Nathan Horton, but a different guy.
Well, was it Van Riemsdyk on there for Philadelphia?
Van Riemsdyk is on this list.
Right.
And he is. So he's a guy that...
he was a guy who was on waivers, right?
Yes.
Passed through waivers.
Right, and he's healthy. I would put him in kind of a Duchene category. Not living up to the contract, but a guy that's got some talent and has done big things in the league before.
But what category you put him? I mean, Philadelphia was willing to literally put him on waivers in the middle of the season. So what... Where do you think – what is he in this what we're talking about? Is he a guy that can still play, or is he a guy that's way overpaid and can't play anymore?
He will still play.
No, I know, but, I mean, can he produce?
Well, that's the question. There are some of these guys who actually cannot play, period, like physically can't play, that they're trying to get rid of the contract.
I think he came back and played pretty well once he passed through waivers and was
yeah, like James
up, yes.
Neal was waived. There were a
yep.
number of guys
right.
that are at that age that just they were just trying to see. Gostis Bear was another one, remember? I'm trying to think of an example of a guy on this list. I'm thumbing through this thing of where a player really has been not productive at all for a long time. So what is the going rate? Is it you give us an extra first-round pick? Okay, we'll talk. You know, they've got to take a few of those, right? So how do they feel about Duchene? How do you try to vet that? Because if you play your cards right, Seattle, once again, like Vegas, is going to be in a very good position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen anything that's really jumped out at me that it's basically, and I hate to do this, but, you know, I mean, it's basically the Kyle Turris, right? It's that guy where it seems like, oof, not sure, can still got anything left.
Right.
Can still play at this level.
Right, and Duchene's not
level.
In that category, right? And neither
no.
is
no. –
Duchene's got a lot to bring to the table in no. comparison to a category like that.
Yeah, nothing's really jumping out at me. Van Riemsdyk is close to that. Because
he's got two more years at $7 million a year,
but
Van Riemsdyk.
But he did produce.
That's the thing about Duchene's contract is it's for a lot longer. It's what, five more years?
Mm-hmm. Yep. What do you make of it? Where do you stand?
Well,
are you willing to let a guy like Trennan? You okay with that? If he were to go, Cale Yarncroke?
I think.
Victor Arvidsson.
Okay, let's shift it around. Here's another discussion I'm sure they'll have in the room. Who's more valuable long term, Trennan or Carrier? Because that is one thing you could do. You could
protect
Favreau.
As much as I'm a big Trennan fan, I mean, I also said I need to see Carrier again. Are we positive 100% it translates to next season? And it looks like that. I mean, but there's something like you do not earn that much playing time that fast and be put in all spots and everybody's comfortable with it. And, oh, by the way, it looks like he's comfortable with it and not think that he can't do the same thing next year or moving forward. So I'd probably have to lean toward Carrier. I mean, he was playing big, big spots. I mean, clearly they trusted him. Clearly they had no issues with Carrier being out there in whatever. They didn't care about his minutes. They didn't care about special teams. They didn't care about what D pairing. He was on the first D pair. They didn't care. It didn't bother them. So there was a lot of trust in him, and I mean a lot. So I have to believe he passes everything with flying colors, and there's no reason why he couldn't duplicate, you know, another season. He couldn't do it again. But it is one. It is a small sample. I mean, it is, but it's not like Trennan's got this, you know, gigantic sampling.
Another thing that came out of this article was they felt like Seattle could put together a team that safely could be in that 85 to 87 point range, and maybe even closer to 90. Now, Vegas, in comparison, what do they have, 110 their first year?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, but once again, if they hit it big, I just, what are the odds that they do something? But I think that's a good neighborhood. Fringe playoff team the first year, where when people, if people said that for Vegas, people would like laugh and say, come on, give me a break. There's no way. But not only did they make the playoffs, they got all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. It's not that not like they snuck into the playoffs, right? They were a great team all the way through. So they're looking at the players that they project to be available, and they're thinking somewhere along the lines of 87 to 90 points, which would put you kind of right on the outside looking in, probably.
Why don't you tell everybody about Loan Pronto?
All right, we'll talk Loan Pronto. Now, here is what I've been emphasizing a lot this week, and that is your value of your home in our listening area. It's very high right now. You can take advantage of that with Loan Pronto, because if you want a home equity loan, you're in the position to take out tens of thousands of dollars from your home equity to reinvest either in your own home on a renovation project, a home improvement project, maybe a back deck, something you've been envisioning for a long time. You've got that available to you by using Loan Pronto. But also, if you need to pay off some credit card debt or some other kind of debt, you need money right now, it's a great option. Loan Pronto wants to help you with it, and here's the best part. It's not a hassle. They've streamlined it. It's digital. You'll be done in 2 weeks, and you'll be really happy to have that money in your hand that you can utilize that you need right now. Take advantage of the situation you're in our listening area. Home values are high. Loan Pronto. Give them a call about the zero-cost refi. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or go to loanpronto.com. It's really simple. Make that one phone call or jump on the website, learn more about it, and you can be on the road to having the cash you need right now to address some things or reinvest in your home and add more value. It's a great game to play long term. Loan Pronto, the zero cross refi, 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender. NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero costs.
Well, not yet. I mean, we got a little bit longer. By the way, don't forget, 94.9 is your home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tonight, Sounds take on Gwinnett Stripers. That's, of course, the AAA affiliate for the Bravos. Pre-game show begins at 5:50. First pitch at 6:05. Nashville Sounds baseball on 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza Company. They've got a big homestand coming up very soon, and I think it is time for me to get there. I've taken in one game this year, the Smokies game in Knoxville / Pigeon Forge. By the way, did you know that they're going to build? I asked Vince about this because I had heard stuff about it. I was like, nah, go to that stadium. It's a nice little ballpark there, you know, double-A ballpark, and I'm like, nah, that can't be true. And I asked Vince, and he said it's absolutely true. And I think we talked about it. We did a little bit on Monday. They're going to build a new ballpark downtown Knoxville.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because that one is out at the Pigeon Forge exit.
Correct. So who plays there?
Who's going to play at the Smokies?
If they build a new downtown ballpark, who would play there?
Vince was telling me they'll do, like, you know, tournaments and stuff. They'll just do stuff. They'll figure out other alternative stuff to do there. Because I asked him that. And I was like, well, what are they going to do with this? You know, maybe they could turn it into, I don't know. But he said they would keep it. That is a real thing. They want a ballpark downtown in Knoxville. So,
it's a good idea. But yeah, it's a predicament, you know, in terms of trying to get a minor league team, because we know the minor leagues have shrunk.
Yep.
And we know that park out in Pigeon Forge, you tell me, is it a nice place to come watch a game? Are they drawing pretty well? And they're established as a double A city, right?
Well, remember, I typically go there on Wednesday nights. So, you know, I don't know if Wednesday night's a big draw or not. I mean, it's, you know,
is it a nice park?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with it at all. But it's all about location. Location, location, location. They want something in downtown Knoxville. I mean, it's not, I guess, what would that be? What's the equivalent? I mean, that's further than downtown to Murfreesboro. That's further than that, isn't it? I mean, it's probably,
yeah, that's a good ways.
45 minutes.
Got to be.
Right?
And I'm sure they see what, you know, the Sounds are doing. They see what Louisville's got. They see what Chattanooga's got. Chattanooga's got a great double-A park right there in the middle of downtown. They see what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, you know, it's too bad. You'd have to wind back the clock. I don't know all the details, but they used to play not in the middle of downtown, but they had an old park that was double-A park for generations. And for whatever reason, they couldn't make the deal back then to build a downtown park. Like, I wonder what they didn't see back then when it was time to do that. And instead, these guys kind of beat them to it. They built the park out on the outskirts there. And like you said, it's a long way from a lot of the people, right? I guess tourists, I would imagine tourists make up a pretty decent size of their ticket revenue. Is that fair to say?
I would think so. I mean, that's a busy, busy exit.
Right.
So I would assume so. I mean, we are. We always end up there, and certainly.
But as a municipality, the city of Knoxville, you would have thought that there might have been a better push to, hey, wait a minute, we're not letting it go out there. Let's keep it in the city.
Yeah.
Let's make it a big thing for our people to do right in the heart of the city.
Well, you get the sweetheart deals, and that's, remember,
right,
you know, a lot of
land,
arenas and stadiums. That was a phase, and it's like, hey, come on out here. We'll give you this. Here you go. Look at this plot of land.
It's a unique spot, you know, because of the tourist area that it's around.
It's right off the exit. It's very visible, right? I mean, it's got a good location. If you're talking about just visibility, it's not like some ballpark tucked away somewhere. Great visibility is right off the exit. You can't miss it. But it's 45 minutes from Knoxville. So anybody who's living in that area, I mean, you got to want it. You got to drive out a good ways to go see a double-A baseball game. So it seems like all signs are pointing towards that is going to happen. By the way, I just saw the Predators tweet out that they congratulated Philip Forsberg and his new fiance, Aaron. They just got engaged, so congratulations!
I thought there's some whispers of that the last day or two. I guess it's officially reported.
Yep.
Good for them.
Yeah. By the way, they were the couple that had the funny video that we referenced and we talked about with Forsberg.
It was around this time last year, wasn't it? Where nobody could do anything. Everyone was trying to figure out, well, how do we entertain ourselves, and they had. She was on the unicycle.
Yeah.
He was
kicking
the soccer ball off the backboard, and she was catching it and slamming it.
Yep.
That was it's quite a performance.
Certainly was. Good stuff. We'll get you a little bit closer to that NASCAR weekend tomorrow. We got a lot more ground to cover tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. It's a beautiful day. It is hot out there, but I want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company's next.